And now we're ready to begin the 13th chapter of Judges. And in this 13th chapter of the book of Judges, we have the beginning of the story of Samson. Samson, who was the last of the judges of Israel, whose story is recorded in this book. And Samson, who was then the last judge before Eli. In the story of Samson, we have some very surprising and uncommon occurrences. The figure he makes in this history is a very great one, and yet he is vastly different from that of his predecessors. We never find him at the head of either a court or of an army, never upon the throne of judgment, nor in the field of battle, yet in his own proper person, he was a great patriot of the country, and a terrible scourge and check to the enemies and oppressors. He was a very eminent believer, as we have recorded in Hebrews 11, verse 32. He was a glorious type of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who also brought the ultimate salvation to the people. The history of the other judges begins with their beginning to be in the office of judge, whereas the history of Samson begins with his birth. It actually begins with his conception, and he was ushered into this world by the announcement of an angel, which should be afterwards done to John the Baptist and to Christ. So we begin the story in the first verse of chapter 13. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. So here we have the familiar old story again. The children of Israel, once a judge is no longer over them, they automatically, it seems, go back into evil, go back into the service of the idolaters. They did evil in the sight of the Lord. The Lord sees this evil. He is always aware of it. And consequently, then, he delivers them into the hand of the Philistines. The Philistines were an ancient people who had lived in this land of Canaan for many, many years. They occupied the southwestern portion of the territory, the very area that Judah and Dan were to have as their tribes, and they were never completely conquered during the time of Joshua. They were never completely run out of this territory. They always remained in some kind of position of power and existence, even when Joshua had finished with his work here. God left them for a purpose, and that purpose was to do the very thing that he's doing right here, to be able to deliver his people into the hands of in times when the people were disobedient to God. And they were a people that oppressed God's people for a long time. Here we're going to see that they were into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years, but the Philistines kept coming back and back again and again, even in the times of David and Solomon, and they were an age-old enemy to the people of God. They had 5 chief cities, and they were also very deeply imbued with superstition and the worship of idols. Their chief idols were Dagon, Ashtaroth, and Baalzebub. They had priests and diviners who were attached to the various seats of worship. And we really do not read anything about the Philistines as such in the New Testament. And it seems that they obviously were blended eventually into the Jewish nation. So this was a very formidable enemy with which the people were faced now. They had been delivered into the hands of this enemy by God. God could have delivered them from them, but because of their unfaithfulness, because of their doing evil in the sight of the Lord, he delivered them to them. And this is going to be a long siege. Here we read of 40 years. And during this time, Samson is born, and he is raised then to be the one to give them some deliverance from the Philistines at this time. So verse 2, and there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. So now we read about the parents of Samson. The man was of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, so he was of the tribe of Dan. And Samson then would come from this tribe of Dan. And this seems to be the fulfillment of the blessing given to Dan back in Genesis 49, verse 16, when Jacob said that he should judge his people. And so the judgeship of Samson is a fulfillment of that blessing. Dan was also located in the very territory that the Philistines occupied, and so it would be a very appropriate tribe to have one rise up from to oppose these Philistines. The Philistines were such a prominent people that actually this name and this territory called Palestine is a derivative of the word that applies to the Philistines. Well, Manoah's wife was barren and barrenot. That is, it had been apparently a long past time for her to be able to bear children. She hadn't been able to bear children, and so she is put into this position so that when the man Samson does come, he will be much appreciated and realize that he is a blessing of God. And this has been true of a lot of the great people of God. Many eminent persons were born of mothers that had been kept a great while in this state of being barren. And we read of people like Isaac, Joseph, Samuel, John the Baptist, all of whom were born of mothers who had been barren for a period of time and who felt that maybe they were not going to be blessed with children, so that when these great people were born of them, they did truly realize that it was a blessing of God. Verse 3, "And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman, and said unto her." Now here we have an angel of the Lord appearing to this wife of Manoah. And some have thought this was the Lord himself, the Savior. And it doesn't really say that here. It just specifically does mention that it is the angel of the Lord. So we know that it is a heavenly being. It is a being that's not just another man coming to talk to a man, but it's someone that from the spiritual realm sent by God. And this angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said unto her, "Behold, now thou art barren and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son." So due to the fact that this was a heavenly being, it was a miraculous appearance. He was able to tell the woman that she was now in a state of being barren. Certainly, an ordinary stranger would not know this, could not just approach this woman and tell her this, but this angel could do that. But he further says, "Thou shalt conceive and bear a son." You're going to bear a son. You're going to be fruitful. And so he is giving her a prophecy about this, a promise that she will not stay in a barren state, but that she's going to bear a son. And this should be very good news for this woman. Verse 4, "Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine or strong drink, and eat not anything unclean. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." Here we have the rest of the message of this angel. And he's telling this woman very plainly to beware and not to drink wine, nor strong drink, nor eat anything unclean. For this son is going to be a Nazarite from the mother's womb. And due to the fact that the son will be a Nazarite, then the mother must keep herself pure, free from anything unclean, free from eating or participating in anything that would defile a person who had the vow of a Nazarite. Which shows us that this angel knew then what modern science knows today, and that is that when a mother has an unborn child, the things that she eats, the things that she does to her body, will have an influence upon the development of that child. So this son was to be a Nazarite from the mother's womb and not to have anything taken up by the mother while she was carrying him that would in any wise defile him or spoil the idea of him being pure and having the Nazarite vow. And he further concludes this in verse 5 by saying, "For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head." So this son was to have the complete vow of the Nazarite. He wouldn't drink any wine or strong drink. He wouldn't eat anything that was unclean, and the razor would not come on his head during the time of this vow, and of course his vow was to last for his lifetime. "For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb." This makes the judgeship of Samson peculiar from the other judges, because he was the only one that had to be in this holy, pure state of being a Nazarite all of his life. This also makes him a type of Christ, although Christ was not a Nazarite. Christ had to be free from all impurities. He had to be holy and totally devoted to God all of his life. It also makes him a type of John the Baptist, for John the Baptist was also a Nazarite from his mother's womb. And the final thing the angel says is, "And he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." Samson was going to be a deliverer of Israel from the Philistines. But notice how he words this: "He shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." This tyranny, this oppression by the Philistines was a long-standing one. We read of 40 years. And even it was longer than that when you spread it on out to the far-reaching consequences that the Philistines had in their dealings with the children of Israel over the history of this people. So he wouldn't make a complete deliverance. He would not completely throw the Philistines down so that they would have no more ability to harass the people. But he would begin to do so. He'd make a good beginning, a good showing, so that it could be dated back to Samson as the beginning of the turn here to cease the domination of God's people by the Philistines. Verse 6, "Then the woman came and told her husband, saying, A man of God came unto me, and his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible." So she described this angel to her husband as though he was like an angel. She says his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible. And of course, this is the experience that all persons have whenever they are approached by a heavenly being. It strikes fear. It brings about a sense of awe and respect and reverence. And so she said that his countenance was very terrible. It was an awesome thing to look at. It was not a very comfortable situation to be in the presence of one of these heavenly beings. And she says, "But I asked him not whence he was, neither told me he me his name." So she didn't get into any conversation about who he was or where he was from, and he didn't tell her his name, and that's just all she could tell her husband, that this man of God, this one who looked like an angel, appeared to her. "But he said unto me, Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and now drink no wine or strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death." So she relates very plainly here to her husband what this angel has told her, and she's very pleased to give him the news, for this means that her barrenness is going to come to an end. It means that they're going to be blessed with a child, a peculiar child, one that's going to be a Nazarite from his mother's womb, a child that's going to be dedicated to God to the day of his death, a child that's going to begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. We'd like to again state that Samson would be, in this sense, a type of Jesus. For Jesus also was a Savior, but Jesus carried his work far beyond that of Samson. Samson would begin to deliver Israel out of the Philistines, but we find that Jesus is both the author and finisher of our faith. Not only does he begin to deliver us, but he carries out the finishing of it. He is all we need to be able to please God and to be acceptable to God. We do not look for any other to come and to finish the work, or we do not think of him as being incomplete in his work. He has completely given us what we need for salvation. Here's a case of a woman who learned something about the will of God before her husband did, and she promptly went to her husband and told him about it. She shared the news with her husband, so that he then is in a position of learning something of God from his wife, because his wife has been privileged to learn about it before he did. So we can look upon this family that Samson's going to be born into as being a holy family, one that is a God-fearing family, one in which the husband and wife communicate to each other and have a very pleasant relationship with each other, and one in which they freely talk about the things of God among themselves. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.